I love how the mute button is taped over on these things. We don't have the freedom of will to exercise over the mute button. Okay. All right. Okay. I can tell this is going to go well. Well, good morning. This morning, you were supposed to have Tom Detmer. He's supposed to do 2 weeks, and if you were here last week, you know that he, as always, did an impeccable job, and I'm not a poor man's Tom Detmer. I think I'm a poor man's Wendell, who's a poor man's Tom Detmer. And in the negotiations that had to take place, I mean, you can imagine, given the bureaucracy of our church, that in the negotiations that had to take place in order for me to actually take over for Tom, this is a special elder-designated Sunday today. And so Tom, in exchange for me trading with him, had to agree to do an entire home group for, I don't know, 6 or 7 weeks or something like that. So though the forces of malevolency and evil were arrayed against Tom and I, and by that I mean Wendell, we managed to convince him to relinquish one Sunday, and all we had to give him were a goat, a $3 certificate to Azar's Big Boy, and a can of WD-40, which is great. So the end result of all this and the upshot is that Tom is not here. He's in Minnesota doing the Lord knows what. Wendell has been feasting the entire week at Azar's and feverishly lubricating his bike chain. And you all are out of luck. So we'll see. So we're not going to get a sermon. No, just riffing on you. It's great. So in order to channel Tom, I'm going to try and pepper in some Tomisms. So see if you can spot those this morning. So our topic this morning is chiefly that of gratitude and humbly readopting a godly, proper perspective on our lives and our Lord. And this will perhaps conjure up reminders of past sermons that I've done. And it probably should, because I only get to do a sermon once or twice a year. And each time that that comes up, I think, oh, what would be the best thing to talk about? And in my life, I lose sight of this over and over and over again, day by day by day. And so it's always at the forefront of my mind, this topic of gratitude, humility, and thankfulness. So what I'd like to do is to talk through some quote-unquote ordinary, pedestrian, normal things that we think and deal with on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, monthly basis, and try and think about them anew. Perhaps each item on the list won't apply exactly to you, or you'll find you have a healthy attitude towards each item or one particular item. Nevertheless, I think we would all do well, and I first and foremost include myself in this, about rethinking these normal things that we deal with on a daily basis. So a large part of maturing and growing in the knowledge of God and is increasing awareness of how richly we've been blessed by God. More and more, we see that the lavish and unceasing gift-giving from God described for us in Ephesians is true. More and more, we come to grips with our sinfulness and find, to our astonishment, that God continues to impart grace after grace and blessing upon blessing. In James 1:16-18, a passage we all know well, but it's so profound, says, "Don't be deceived, my dear brothers and sisters. Every good and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. He chose to give us birth through the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of all he's created." So not only is everything that God has created good, as Genesis tells us, again, nothing new, but the implication in James and the direct command in 1 Timothy is that all these good things are to be received with thankfulness and gratitude. However, James illuminates our often problematic response to these blessings when he contrasts the giver, the Father of heavenly lights, who does not change, with the fickle and sinful receiver, that being us, quote-unquote, shifting shadows. What lies at the root of this fickleness and foolishness on our part? In other words, there is no doubt that from the scriptures and our general experience as Christians, God does bless us. We ask him to. He continues to every day. So why do we find it so easy to ignore all that he has kindly imparted to us and just sort of go on blithely with our lives? Part of the answer is what Tom talked about last week. When our basic needs are met, we as finite, sinful creatures forget how those needs were met. Just like the Israelites in the wilderness, all it takes is a moderately full belly for us to feel self-sustaining and independent. It's amazing how quickly we go from dire want and privation to feeling confident in our own abilities. The root issue, as always, is a loss of perspective. We fail to realize not only the fact that we, as wicked sinners, have no claim on any good or perfect gift, and we spectacularly fail to appreciate the magnitude of each discrete good thing that the Lord showers us with minute by minute. Of course, the problem is one of our own making, so how do we step back and learn to appreciate what He has done for us? And this is a daily challenge, as Tom talked about last week. So let's take a few items and few minutes to reflect on the truth of ordinary, everyday good things to which we have grown accustomed or numb, always asking ourselves the question, has the nature or the goodness of the gift changed, or has our gratitude and appreciation for it changed? In pretty much every case, we'll find that the latter is true. Thus, it's up to us to fix the problem. As it turns out, fixing it may be as simple as contemplating the loss of that particular gift or the privation of it. What would we do without the gift? Or how have we behaved when that gift has been withdrawn? As Chesterton says, the way to love anything is to realize that it may be lost. Humility, realizing that we don't deserve the gifts we receive and could be without them, is the key. So let's look at the first item on the list. Let's take something as simple as, and I'm glad the door is open today, otherwise the illustration wouldn't work very well, but the weather and nature outside. If we aren't careful, and I think those of us who work outside the home see this a little bit more, if we're not careful, we can spend most of our existence in hermetically sealed boxes, never fully delighting in the rich outdoors that God has given us. We wake up in air-conditioned and heated houses, which is, again, a really neat thing. We drive in our magical automobiles in which we continue to have this climate control and cordon ourselves off from nature and arrive at work or church or the store or wherever in which we confront, I mean, I'll use my work as an example. There are hundreds of windows that perpetually have the blinds shut and do not open. They physically cannot open, which is the stupidest thing that I've ever seen. This is crazy. God has created our planet in such a finely tuned situation that we can not only survive and live in nature, but we can flourish in it. Mornings such as this one, again, I'm glad it's a nice morning this morning, otherwise the illustration, it's harder to work, but mornings such as this one are truly transcendent experiences. Waking up, going outside and realizing, my goodness, I'm alive, it's beautiful outside, and it's Sunday, which is fantastic. And if we could only spend some time outside communing with nature and away from our phones or other distractions, I think we would see this more clearly. Dave Stevens and I were talking about, and Dave can correct me if I'm wrong here, but we were talking recently about a coworker of his. He took a brief road trip with this coworker, and during the several hours they were in the car, it was a beautiful day like today. I believe they're on the highway. It never dawned on the coworker that you could do something like open up the windows. And Dave, and so they just sat in air-conditioned, climate-controlled environment. And Dave suggested to him when they departed from one another, he said, you know, should try driving to school sometime with the windows open. And the guy, he thought about it, and then he later did it and reported back to Dave. He said, that is the greatest thing. I'm going to do that again. And why would that even be a revelatory experience? That's their windows. They open. We shouldn't. So I say all that to say it's crazy. It's crazy that we can. It's a blessing that we can insulate ourselves at least some of the time from the elements and from nature and so forth. It's great that we have mosquito netting and screens on our doors. It's great that we have fans in our house and air conditioning and so forth. But the fact that we insulate ourselves against the reality of how gloriously the Lord has made nature is remarkable. Let the kids play outside in the rain sometime. Open up all the windows in the house at the first sign of spring. Camp out in the backyard when you don't have to once in a while. Just some basic things. Next thing is, let's consider our bodies. These strange, awesome things that we're always talking about reducing in size. We speak all the time about how the unborn are fearfully and wonderfully made, and that's absolutely true. But this, no matter how much hair we might have lost or how many pounds we might have gained, is true of us as well. We are all fearfully and wonderfully made. We are like really and truly majestic creatures. How remarkable is it that most of us were able to walk in here unassisted this morning? That's crazy. How crazy is it that we can listen intently to a speaker drone on and on with our delicately honed ears and see our children hitting one another out of the corner of our precisely made eyes, or write a check for $30,000 for the offering plate with our nimble, exquisite hands? The question is, what is going on here? Not, we've always been able to do those things, that's pretty normal. But as I'll mention again in a moment, monotony is no indication of the value or the exceptional nature of a deed or a thing, right? The mere fact that something is repeated has nothing to say about how glorious or amazing it is. And so it's almost as if there's some sort of conspiracy for us to be able to not only survive in the world that God has made, but truly enjoy it, again, to flourish in it. Several manly men were, not including myself, were able to relocate thousands and thousands of pounds of playground equipment from dozens of miles away. And granted, they had the help of these magical motor coaches that we will talk about later. But using primarily their own strength and another magical device called an air hammer, they were able to do this. And that is pretty amazing. Think specifically of our humble feet. Perhaps we have feet that smell or that don't work as well as they used to, or have toenails that our wives say have grown into broadswords. Maybe some of you don't, but some of us have wives who say that. No matter, these things allow us to ambulate wherever we wish. If you want a physical counterpart to the spiritual or intellectual concept of free will, the feet are that thing. They are the counterpart. Chesterton has this to say when he stares in astonishment at this often neglected and derided part of our bodies. He says, "What are these two beautiful and industrious beings, whom I see everywhere, serving me I know not why? What fairy godmother bade them come trotting out of Elfland when I was born? What god of the borderland, what barbaric god of legs, must I propitiate with fire and wine, lest they run away with me?" And I think you can extend that to any other, to our hands, to our feet, to our legs, to it's just our whole entire body that we're made up in such a remarkable way. Next, let's talk about something else that's very commonplace: our houses, our apartments, our dwelling spaces. When I was looking up the average size of a house in the United States, it is only surpassed by that of Australia for some reason. I don't know what they're doing over there, but in the United States, it's 2,200 square feet. 2,200 square feet is the average house, and this is remarkable. One, because as we'll know, most of humanity has dwelt in homes that are at least half that size, if not a quarter of that size, and seen it to be a charitable living space. This is way more space than we need. Perhaps our respective houses aren't in ideal locations, or maybe the property adjoining them we don't really find satisfactory. We'd like to move. Or maybe it's not enough, we think, to accommodate growing families. Still, we have way, way, way more room than we need to live comfortably, and as a result, we often end up filling that extra space with stuff we don't need and we won't use. Moreover, our residences are filled with extraordinary things that the majority of humans throughout history could only dream of. Like, just go through your kitchen and look at the things that you have, and whether or not people hundreds of years ago could have replicated what those things do, right? If you feel tired, why don't you go lie down on a bed that kings and queens would have been envious of several hundred years ago? Or if you're thirsty, I always talk about water somehow, but why don't you go drink as much potable water coming out of your magical faucet in many different rooms of your house as you would like? The fact that there are still humans, plenty of humans around the world who spend a great deal of their day going and finding water and bringing it back to their homes to use, to clean with, to drink, to cook with, all that sort of thing. And we, with the flick of a wrist, can get it whenever we want to. Absolutely mind-blowing. What about washing laundry or doing dishes, things that I am not well acquainted with? We have machines that at least do part of that. If we want to get up earlier or stay up later, then the sun will allow us to get things done. That's okay. We have magical electricity coursing through our homes that allow us to turn day into night and summer into winter and play Farmville. And if we need a break from Farmville and need to go to the bathroom, we have indoor plumbing that will just whisk away whatever waste we have to somewhere else for somebody else to deal with, which is crazy. Just absolutely crazy. Next, let's think about our families. I often ask the question in astonishment, what business do I have being with these joy-inducing children of mine and this remarkable wife? And you can extend this to parents and to siblings and other relatives and so forth. But the answer always comes back the same, doesn't it? We have no business. We have no business being with these glorious people. Each day with them is an unmitigated gift, despite how many times they might get up in the middle of the night or how foul they might smell. It's an unmitigated gift. And a day that we dare not, and each day that we are afforded with them, we dare not take for granted. We're not entitled to any more time with our families. And any morning that we wake up and find ourselves in their presence is a day to be seized, not wasted. How could God allow us to be born to parents who cared for us and loved us? I was not born to Christian parents, but I still am amazed that my dad, in his agnosticism, still read me C.S. Lewis and still read through the Bible as a work of literature as opposed to the Word of God, and who instilled in me and my sister some, at least a modicum of ethical standards. And so how could God allow us to be born to parents who, at the very least, did a serviceable job raising us, or allow us, in turn, to marry our breathtaking spouses and participate in the soul-making enterprise of conceiving and raising glorious children? Is this some sort of scheme of the Lord's to make our heads explode with astonishment? If it doesn't seem that way, then I think we've lost perspective again. Your family and my family may not be powerful or well-regarded or wealthy by American standards, but shouldn't it be the most amazing group of people? Isn't it always the most amazing group of people on the planet in your eyes, in my eyes? Why hasn't your wife taken the kids and run off to Mexico? Why do you get to sit down with your family to meals or do bath time together? Why are they still eager to see you when you come home from the store or from work? I don't know, but it's a true and exhilarating gift that they are. And guys, take your spouse or your significant other if you're not married. What is this majestic, wonderful creature doing associating with you? What is that? What could compel an otherwise sober-minded woman, a sober-minded, righteous, and breathtakingly gorgeous woman, to dedicate herself to you for the rest of her earthly life? I don't know, but we had better take advantage of it while it lasts. Ladies, the same for you. Why is this hardworking, intelligent, slightly overweight guy associating with you? Why does he go every day to a job he can't countenance to provide for the family? Why, when he could be off doing a million other things, does he want nothing more than to be with you and your children at home? Again, it may be easy for us to answer as guys, but it will not be quite as easy to sum up for humble women answering. To sum it up, in Chesterton's words regarding the family, the most extraordinary thing is an ordinary man and an ordinary woman and their ordinary children. Next, take our church body here at Trinity. And this is something that I suppose we could spend a whole morning talking about, but I think the reason this will seem strange is that we are very, it is very fashionable, and especially in Christian circles, to talk about all the flaws of your particular body of believers or Christianity as a whole. It is very fashionable to say, well, we like our church, but X, Y, and Z, or this, that, and the other thing need to be changed. And while that's true, we should be spending just as much time dwelling upon how remarkable and crazy it is that we get to be part of a body of believers like we have here at Trinity. Wouldn't it be great if we spoke to one another and thought repeatedly about the wondrous blessing that our church is to each of us, like full stop, no qualifiers? Our pastor is an excellent godly leader, and he did not pay me to say that. And he is a guardian of the truth of the scriptures. Our elders are men of tremendous character and loving care. Our youth minister is a man of deep love for God's people and a zeal for his kingdom. Our Sunday school teachers, those who share in the service, those who change soiled diapers in the nursery, those who keep our books, etc., all are amazing people doing amazing things for our body. And there is no other place like this. There is no other place like this, at least not in my book. The care for the Lord's word, people, and purposes is unsurpassed as far as I'm concerned. I will not move my family away from this city as long as this church is here, and I suspect many of you feel the same. There is no other group of people that I desire to more to help raise my children, disciple Janelle and me, and remain at for the rest of my years. And Tom and I have spoken about how, and perhaps you feel this as well, but have maybe not talked about it with other folks, we feel like Sunday mornings here are a real glimpse, and this may sound corny, a real glimpse into the new heavens and the new earth that we do not often get during the course of a week. If our physical building should ever cease to be, of course, we'll just go meet in somebody's basement, delighting in the Lord and one another as we always have. Again, we can nitpick everything, right? We can nitpick ourselves, we can nitpick our other people, we can nitpick our church body. But the reality is that Trinity is a gift through which the Lord has saved me, and I suspect many of you as well, from a dead and uninspired Christian existence. I shudder to think about where I and my family would be apart from this body. And before we get into the last facet of things, let's just take a moment thinking of those all those different facets to think about what the rest of our day would look like regarding mundane or pedestrian things. After the service, we'll get to fellowship with others made in God's image, like dozens and dozens of other people made in God's image. And we can spend as long as we want to. Now, there's nap time and there are meal times to get to and so forth. But the reality is there will not be people coming in to persecute us. We can sit here on this glorious day and talk with each other about anything we please. And that is a luxury that many of our brothers and sisters do not have, at least currently. We can go drink from the unceasing drinking fountain. We can take advantage of the magically cold beverages in the fridge. We can rock at home in our futuristic motor coach of a car, going a million miles an hour and cutting into a fraction the amount of time it would have taken us prior to having those things. We can go out to a restaurant and pay somebody else to make us a decadent, opulent meal because we make a decent living. We make more than a decent living. We can take a nap on our wonderful bed. We can FaceTime with a friend hundreds of miles away. What's that about? And we can finish the day praying to a God who cares for us and listens to us and reading out of his very words in one of the many copies and translations of his word that we have at our disposal. That sounds like an absolutely magical day, a fantastic day, a wonderful day, a day that should be taken advantage of. Lastly for today, let's think about our relationship with the Lord in light of how things might otherwise have been. Again, getting back to that, if we love anything, we can realize how much we love it by contemplating its loss. So God owes us nothing. So each breath we take in the bodies he's made for us, in the world he's created us, should give us pause and astonishment. The mere fact that God forgives over and over and over and over, or allows us a new day over and over and over and over, or meets our needs over and over is no good reason to grow complacent with these blessings. And again, said another way, monotony or repetition do not speak at all to the nature of the things being repeated. The fact that a baseball player might hit 4 home runs in a game doesn't diminish the remarkable feat of hitting 1 home run. Similarly, God forgiving us one time is exceedingly gracious, in the same way that Him forgiving us 70 times 7 times is. The reality of salvation, as we've spoken of before, is that each of us is a beggar telling other beggars where to find bread. We bring nothing to the table, but find that the table is filled with a 7-course feast. We deserve nothing more than a glimpse of the castle, but find ourselves afforded an audience with the King in His very throne room. Not only does God create us, sustain us moment by moment, and bless us immeasurably, but He truly and lovingly forgives us when we insist that we don't need Him, and that is sin, and that is amazing. To conclude, I'll allow Chesterton, as always, to speak to the humility engendering gratitude about things that have always seemed commonplace and normal, but are in fact anything but. He says, "The truth is that all genuine appreciation rests on a certain mystery of humility and almost of darkness. The man who said, 'Blessed is he that expecteth nothing, for he shall not be disappointed,' put the eulogy quite inadequately and even falsely. The truth is, blessed is he that expecteth nothing, for he shall be gloriously surprised. The man who expects nothing sees redder roses than the common man can see, and greener grass and a more startling sun. Blessed is he that expecteth nothing, for he shall possess the cities and the mountains. Blessed is the meek, for he shall inherit the earth." Until we realize that things might not be, we cannot realize the things that are. Until we see the background of darkness, we cannot admire the light as a single created being. As soon as we have seen the darkness, all light is lightning, sudden, blinding, and divine. Until we picture non-entity, we underrate the victory of God and cannot realize any of the trophies of His ancient war. And again, humility is the thing which for us is ever renewing the earth and the stars. It is humility and not duty which preserves the stars from wrong, from the unpardonable wrong of casual resignation. It is through humility that the most ancient heavens are for us fresh and strong. The curse that came before history has laid on us a tendency to be weary of wonders. That is us, weary of wonders. If we saw the sun for the first time, it would be the most fearful and beautiful of meteors. Now we see it for the 100th time, and we call it, in the hideous and blasphemous phrase of Wordsworth, quote, "the light of common day," end quote. We are inclined to increase our claims. We are inclined to demand 6 such suns, to demand a blue sun, to demand a green sun. Humility is perpetually putting us back in primal darkness. There all light is lightning, startling and instantaneous. Until we understand that original dark, and here he's paralleling it obviously with original sin, with our continued sin, in which we have neither sight nor expectation, we can give no hearty and childlike praise to the splendid sensationalism of things. The man who destroys himself creates the universe. To the humble man and to the humble man alone, the sun is really a sun. To the humble man and to the humble man alone, the sea is really a sea. When he looks at all the faces in the street, he does not realize that men are alive. He realizes with dramatic pleasure that they are not dead. End quote. So, to conclude, let us look anew with humility and gratitude and wonder at every blessing which God has showered upon us. There's nothing commonplace or pedestrian in all the blessings that God has given us, and we would do well in our love for one another and our love for Him to contemplate that and remember it on a daily basis. That is it for this morning. You are dismissed to love and serve one another in Christ's name, not in the love. There's just a lot of love there. You're dismissed.